G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, the podcast that's all about intermittent fasting. I'm your host, Graham Curry from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilograms or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and have successfully maintained that weight loss. I'm also the author of the Amazon category best-selling book, The Fasting Highway, which will give you a great insight into what it's actually like to live it day to day, how to get started, what it's about, what are some of the health benefits that come from it, and how to turn it into a successful long-term lifestyle. In this series of podcasts, you'll be hearing from people from all over the world, from the beginners to the experienced and those that are on the journey. You'll also be hearing from some leaders in the intermittent fasting community, and you'll also be hearing from some past guests as we recheck in to see how they've been going. And thank you for joining us here on the Fasting Highway. Enjoy the show. G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, and this is episode 116. And just before I get to today's podcast, I just wanted to acknowledge the people out there that have been buying my book, The Fasting Highway, on Amazon in both paperback and Kindle, and also the New Zealand and Australians that have been buying it on my website at www.thefastinghighway.com. Thank you so much. It's very heartwarming to receive your messages of support and feedback. I'm really glad that it's resonated with so many people around the world. But if you really do want to get an insight into what it's like to live an intermittent fasting lifestyle and sustain it for a period of time, then take a read of my book, The Fasting Highway. It's a pretty simple, easy-to-read book. It doesn't get bogged down in the science. There's plenty of other places you can get that. So that's my book, The Fasting Highway. Okay, let's get on to today's show. And I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by two amazing ladies. And they are the co-hosts of the Fabulously Keto podcast. And they are Jackie Fletcher, who lives in the United Kingdom and is the founder of Fabulously Keto and the Fabulously Keto podcast, and Dr. Louise Reynolds, who lives in Melbourne, Australia. And these two ladies have been through an amazing weight loss transformation in their own right. Absolutely incredible, as you'll hear in this episode. But also, they are well known in the ketogenic community through their podcast, and they do a great job. So anytime you want to take a listen to that, please do so. But I'm going to let the ladies tell the story. If you want to know more about them individually, just take a look at the show notes there. Okay, let's welcome Jackie and Louise. Oh, g'day, guys, and welcome to the Fasting Highway, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having us. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks, Graham. And you're two very inspiring people in the ketogenic community out there, and thank you for all the work you do with your podcasts and everything else. And we'll talk about that a bit later in the show. But Jackie and Louise, for people out there that may not know you, we heard a bit about you in the introduction there. We might start with you, Jackie, if you don't mind. If you could just give us a bit of your backstory, sort of any issues you had with weight and health and that sort of thing, and how you found your way to things like keto, and maybe talk a touch about fasting too, how you sort of came to that.
Yeah, sure. So my journey started I think it started before I was born, because I say I was destined to be fat. And if anyone's old enough to remember the 70s American detective Cannon, well, that was my granddad. He was that sort of size. And so my dad was always obese. And I guess it was just in my genes that that was going to happen to me. Add to that all the food that I was eating, and I was destined to be fat. So when I was at primary school, in those days, people weren't overweight, but there was me and a few others who were chubby, I should say. And I just felt fat. And when I look back at the photos, I just think, oh gosh, I wish I could be like that now. And so as I grew up, when I hit my teens, I started with Weight Watchers. I was early teens, all sorts of diets that I've tried, the Cambridge diet, so shakes, everything I tried, but I could never stick to it. I was not very motivated to continue through, and I wasn't seeing the results, so I would just give up really quickly. So I was up and down with my weight all the time. By the time I hit, I think it was going on before then, 17, we found out I had a tumor. We didn't know at the time until they operated, but a tumor on my ovaries, which now when I look back is probably could be due to insulin resistance already starting at that age. So they took out this massive tumor the size of a football, UK soccer ball, and along with it they took 1.5 ovaries and my appendix. Now at the time I didn't know they'd take 1.5 ovaries, I thought it was just one. I only found that out much later, but from there my weight ballooned even more. By the time I was 19, I weighed 90 kilos. I had stomach ulcers. Then in my mid-20s, I started to get migraines. Then in my 30s, I got gallstones. So there was constantly things going on. And over the years, my weight just kept creeping up and creeping up. So by the time I would say probably about 2008, something like that, was 15 and a half stone, which is about, can't remember what it is. Anyway, I was 15 and a half stone. So that was probably about around 220 pounds, something like that, maybe a bit less. So then my weight really massively ballooned. I was in a very stressful work environment. There was a lot of things going on. I was not sleeping very much. I was working because my boys were youngish. So I was putting them to bed and then going to work till 1-2 o'clock in the morning, getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to take them to school. So I was living on about 4 to 5 hours sleep, and my weight just ballooned. But I was in this mentality of, I can't do anything about this. I can't do diets. Diets don't work. What's the point? I'm not motivated. And a lot of negative self-talk. And I came across a book by Gretchen Rubin called Better Than Before. And in it, she mentioned Gary Taub's Why We Get Fat. So for some reason, even though I had no intention of going on diet, I had no intention of changing what I was doing. I knew I was addicted to wheat because I knew wheat was very addictive. I'd read Wheat Belly many years before. I'd even many years before given up wheat for 9 months. But I knew I was in this cycle of I couldn't get out of that. So I listened to the book, Gary Taub's, and something in there just shifted. It all seemed to make sense. I just cut out potatoes, rice, pasta, wheat. I didn't even cut out sugar. I didn't even cut out chocolate. I just cut out all those main food groups, added in some extra vegetables, and then the weight started to slowly come off. And it was about 6 or 7 months later that I came across keto and I read another book, and that got me honing in more about what I was eating, and I started to bring in intermittent fasting at that point, and I continued to lose weight. So I went from 16 and a half stone, which is about 231 pounds, 105 kilos, to where I am currently, which fluctuates, like you say, Graham, a range between 12 and a half and 13 stone, which is, well, as of today, 180 pounds. So I'm at my top end, 182 pounds. What's that in kilos? Anyone know, you guys?
It's about 90.
It's about 80 kilos, I think.
87 or something, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And that's where we are today.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it must have been very traumatic for you as a young woman, having to deal with that situation. I can't imagine what it'd be like to have a soccer ball taken out of your stomach and more. As a young woman, that must have been really traumatic for you and took some recovery. So that spiral of weight gain that you had just kept on going and going and going. And you got to that point, I guess, where you just thought, this is me. This is my life. I'm just going to be a big person. You were resigned to that fact. And it wasn't until you read that book that you thought, well, hang on a minute here. Maybe I can do something about it. And then you read the other book, and then you sort of started to get excited, and you found your way to things like keto and that sort of thing. So when you found your way to keto, how did you actually learn about keto? What sort of processes did you put in place to make sure what you were doing was the right way, or did you know the right way at the time?
No, and I think I've just fumbled my way through, and I think maybe if I'd used a bit more attention and investigated a bit more, then I might have done my journey a bit quicker, maybe. But I just started to just cut out food. So at the time, I'd gone, taken out the potatoes and the pasta and the rice and all things like that. The vegetables I was mainly eating were peas and corn. So when I became keto, I've learned that that's not really keto. So I took those out, went for more leafy green vegetables. I never weighed anything. I never measured anything. I never tracked anything, because we relate that to being on diet, and I really cannot be bothered with that. So I'm not a good tracker. Over time, I do it occasionally. So I've learned, you know, how much 70 grams of lettuce is, or 70 grams of tomatoes, or I get an idea. So I've got an approximate idea, but I'm not a great one for tracking. So I probably could have done it better than I did.
You mentioned there you're a wheat addict, and I hear a lot of people talk about, you know, issues they have with food, but I haven't heard many people talk about that they're a wheat addict. So just give us a picture of what that's like to be a wheat addict. Just tell us some of the things that transpire when you are that.
Well, I learned about this through Dr. William Davis, MD, and he talks about a few things, and he talks about that wheat has changed over the years. And in the last 50 years, where we've had combine harvesters, they've modified the wheat to make it shorter and stand straight so that the combine harvester can come through and collect the wheat. And what that's done is changed the way the proteins are, and it affects our stomach differently than it used to. And also it affects our brain. So if they take a brain scan, it lights up the same pathways in the brain as cocaine, alcohol. We're also seeing it now with sugar and phone sort of gaming addiction. They lights up the same pathways in the brain. So for me, what it was I would have some toast in the morning, and I think I really shouldn't have that toast in the morning, but every morning I needed to have the toast. And I think about not having bread for lunch, but I wanted the bread, so it kept me going back. I say that I used to drive 6 miles every day, Monday to Friday, to buy a fresh loaf of bread, because that bread was delicious, but also I just kept wanting to eat it, couldn't stop eating it.
Yeah, I can really resonate with that. Bread was my nemesis, Jackie, and I know one thing that really led to my obesity was my love of bread, for sure. And I was like you, I'd gone buy a fresh loaf, you know, freshly cooked out of a beautiful bakery, or I'd cook one in the bread maker. And I'd just say, yeah, I'm just going to have a couple of slices. No, that never happened. I'd just get up till the bread was gone. And I remember when my closet eating was at its worst, I would actually eat bread at home when I had two daughters and my wife there. And then I would think, man, they got to come out and want some bread. There's none left. Yet there was almost a whole loaf there yesterday. So I'd quickly run down to the shop and get the same loaf, and bring it back and replace it. So it looked like I hadn't eaten too many. I might take a few slices out or something. But yeah, that was I really get what you're saying about bread. It is a killer, but that's really interesting. And you found your way to the keto lifestyle. And I guess over time you fine-tuned that, and you mentioned there intermittent fasting. So let's just, for the listeners out there who are predominantly intermittent fasters, how did you actually find out about intermittent fasting?
It was just part of my keto journey. So at that time, I was listening a lot to Jimmy Moore. So I read all his books, and one of them was Complete Fasting Guide with Dr. Jason Fung. So I just kept pushing my window out. So I'd eat later in the day, and then eventually drop anything before lunch. Mostly I would stop in the early days. I would eat in the evening. I'd eat cheese in the evening before bed, 10 o'clock, something like that, if I felt hungry. So I just stopped all that. And so I just kept widening my window. But just being on the journey is listening to people, reading books, finding out more.
Yeah. I mean, that's a significant amount of weight that you've lost on this journey. And when you think about it, Jackie, if you had to sort of narrow it down, how has that changed your life? I mean, we all talk about life-changing things with weight and transformation and that sort of thing. But for you personally, what sort of things have changed for you that you never thought were possible or that you can do now?
Yeah, because at the time when I first listened to that book back in 2017, I would have been happy to lose a stone, 14 pounds, 6.5 kilos. That would have been fantastic for me to get from where I was to back to where I was previously. That I would have been really happy with that. So the ways that it has changed is my belief about myself and what I can do. So I now believe I can almost do anything, because all those things I believed I couldn't do before, I think I can do. I used to stand at the bottom of the stairs and shout to my kids, can you bring me this? Can you get me that? Because hauling myself up the stairs was hard work. I never exercised. Why would anyone want to exercise? I just didn't get that. So now if I need something, I run up the stairs, might walk up the stairs. I come back down again. Oh, I've forgotten something else. I go back up again. So that I just do more things. I move more. I'm not still not keen on exercise, but I can do it and I do more things. If I knelt down on the floor, I had to lean on something to haul myself up. Whereas now I can get down, get up. I can even put my hands on my head, sit down on the floor, you know, get down on the floor and get myself up again. So I just feel, and it's sort of a lightness inside, but it's also, I can't explain it. It's sort of this feeling of I can do things and I'm healthy. And I think that's the key thing. And I realized that looking back, if I'd have carried on the way I was going, I was on a hiding to nothing and a path of destruction. Whereas now, and I always said from about 2010, I said I wanted to live to 107 because I'm 40 years older than my boys and I want to see them grow up and have kids. But I never considered what I would be like at that age. And I think looking back, if I'd have continued on that journey, I don't think I would have hit 70, let alone 107. So now, you know, now that feels like it's possible. I don't know if it will be true, but it feels possible now.
Oh, well, have a throw at the stumps. You never know. 107, who knows, with modern medicine and everything and cures that coming now for diseases and that sort of thing that we sometimes strike in old age, it may be possible. We may be seeing people live past that 100 regularly. So good luck with that. And I hope you see your boys live a happy and healthy life. But yeah, there's so many variables, isn't there, about fasting and keto and everything else and various lifestyles. But it's those health benefits I find are the most exciting thing. And one of the things I notice about people I interview, and I see it in you two here looking at you on the screen. I mean, this is an audio podcast, but for those who have seen Jackie or Louise, you'll notice that really nice, bright skin, bright eyes, that sort of thing, and just healthy look. And I think that's really common amongst people I interview, and I see it all the time. And that's the first thing I notice about people. So from the health side of things, what would you say have been the most health sort of improvements for you? Just forget about the weight loss for a minute. Anything like skin or anything like that?
My biggest one is migraines. I used to get migraines. They had got better over time since I had my boys, but I would still get them quite regularly. And I still do get them now, but nowhere near as often as I used to. So that's the big thing. I had gallstones, so I would get massive attacks that would last for 8 hours of constant pain. And now I occasionally get a twinge, but it's just a few hours. You know, it's manageable. Sometimes sometimes I'll message Louise in the middle of the night and say, oh, I'm having a gallbladder attack. And we just have a chat while it passes over. But it's usually just a couple of hours that I'm awake now, rather than, you know, 5 to 8 hours before.
And just that relief from the migraines has probably been worth it for you.
Absolutely. Because migraines for me, they still do last 3 days. So not being able to function properly for 3 days, but that would happen really regularly. When I was in my 30s, I'd get a migraine almost every other day. I was taking a lot of medication for it. So the medication would take it away, but then 2 days later it would come back. Whereas now, I two or three times a year, maybe.
Yeah. So you mentioned there, you're not quite where you want to be weight-wise, where you want to end up in your goal range, or you're near your goal range. Sometimes you're up the top, sometimes you're down the bottom. You have that range and maintenance. So let's talk through maintenance for a minute, because for me, it doesn't matter what fasting thing you follow, keto, vegan, whatever it may be. When you get to that maintenance point, it's a whole new mindset. And I think it's, for me, it's vigilance without obsession, and just not freaking out about little spikes and that sort of thing, and doing what you're doing, having that range. So does maintenance make you feel comfortable with the skills that you've learned from keto and now fasting, that you won't regain the weight back?
Absolutely, definitely. So I feel that I should still be at a lower weight, but I balance out, am I willing to make the changes that I would need to make to get to that weight? And the answer is no, I'd rather stay where I am and be happy within myself about, you know, I don't want to be tracking food. So, you know, it would be great if I lost another stone, 14 pounds, 6.5 kilos, but I'd rather just be happy in my life and what I'm doing. But I know now, one, I'm not going to allow myself to go back to where I was, because if I go out of my range, I can bring it back down. And I've got the tools to do that if I need to.
Yeah, I think that's a great attitude, actually. And I think for anybody maintaining, it's a good attitude, because you do know, you do have the tools, and you say to yourself, and that's why I weigh daily. And speaking of weighing, are you a daily weigher, Jackie?
I am, because I'm not really emotionally attached to the number on the scale. So it's just a data metric. I used to weigh every single day. And I would say in the last year, I don't do it every day, because I quite often forget. And that doesn't bother me that I've forgotten. I'll weigh every few days when I think about it. So, but yes, I do, because I don't have an emotional attachment to the number. For me, it's just, how am I doing? Do I need to make some changes? So at the moment, I'm right at my top end. In fact, I'm a pound over today. I'm not worried about that. But if it continues to go up, then I would need to think, right, I need to make some changes, not always knowing what the changes I need to make might be.
Yeah. Join the club. So that's a fantastic explanation of your backstory and where you're up to now. So we might move to you, Louise, if you don't mind, for people that don't know you around the world. This podcast goes out to 43 countries. If you wouldn't mind sort of sharing a bit of your backstory, your health issues and that sort of thing, weight, and then where you found your way to keto and then some fasting as well.
Thanks, Graham. Unlike Jackie, I am a very emotional person, and it was really the emotions that really led me to having a weight problem. I was in an unhappy marriage. I had a young baby at the time. And as Dr. Phil would say, I was having a party in my mouth, and I was really literally eating my emotions. And, you know, yes, Dr. Phil, I was having that party in my mouth, and no, Dr. Phil, it wasn't working for me. So I gained a lot of weight during that really unhappy, stressful time. And it was sort of really so unhappy that, you know, a lot of things that were contributing to that stress in terms of work. I was also doing some study. We ended up in a custody battle, which really became quite you know, quite sort of toxic. And I ended up being, you know, single parenting my son, who later had some learning difficulties. So I was one big ball of stress. So as you can imagine, you know, I tried all manner of things like Jackie. I did the Weight Watchers. I counted the points. I had some shakes, Jenny Craig, so pre-prepared meals, Jucan, just to name a few, you know. But it was interesting because the shakes, I was talking to Jackie the other day, that they were probably low carb-ish, and they actually focused on protein and some fats, but obviously low calorie. And that seemed to work a little bit for me. You know, I'd lost about 15 kilos or 30 pounds. But of course, as we know, they're not sustainable. You know, what we know now in hindsight, if only I could go back to, you know, 2003, maybe. But I am probably one of those people that are, you'd say, over intellectualize things. You know, I like to sort of find out why. And, you know, that's part of the curiosity. I'm a registered paramedic or EMT for the folks in the US. And I'm also now have been since the early 2000s a college professor. So I was looking for the why. You know, how could I be such an intelligent woman and yet be so, as I was, morbidly obese? This calories in, calories out thing certainly wasn't working for me. I hired a personal trainer, you know, to punish me 3 times a week. And, you know, I was trying to do the calories in, calories out thing. And, you know, I knew that I needed to do something, because as a college professor in large freshman classes, I was standing and espousing the virtues of, you know, health and the healthcare system. And here I was not walking the walk or talking the talk, you know, in terms of being more morbidly obese. And it was really hard because, you know, I should know this stuff. So I reached out to one of my university contacts and I said, you know, can in the psychology department, and they were leaders in disorderly eating. And I forever am grateful for this particular colleague who, as a psychologist, and, you know, put myself into therapy, and they used cognitive behavior therapy to really understand what those emotional triggers were and unpack that big ball of stress that I was and really get to the heart of what my food values, my food beliefs, things that were happened, you know, as I grew up, the way that we socialize about food. You know, I have to finish my plate. You know, that's a food value. Don't waste food. And really shift my thinking, feeling and behaviors in managing stress and how I self-soothe through food to make me feel better. And they were largely carbohydrates, you know, so much so that I would eat, you know, carbohydrates and fall asleep just to numb all of the rumination that was going on, those little hamster wheels that were happening, you know. And it was hard because as a single parent, my son was had the learning difficulties and he was on medication. He wouldn't eat his dinner, so his supper. So I would eat his food because I didn't want to waste the food. So that sort of brings me to about 2012. And if you can imagine, I'm approaching 300 pounds or 130 kilos. And I made the decision to undergo weight loss surgery. It really was a bit of a fork in the road because I had seen a colleague, paramedic colleague, and she had transformed herself. And I was like, wow, you look amazing. You know, what have you done? So she let me into you know, her secret that she'd had weight loss surgery. So I went to the literature. I found studies on all of the major surgeries that were available at the time, lap band, bypass, and gastric sleeve. I went to 3 different specialists. I interviewed them. I took the research with yellow highlighted notes, and I basically said, tell me what the risks are. Why should I take your procedure? Well, you know, what are the possible sort of side effects that can happen? Those sorts of things, the complications. So this was around June 2012. So I'm now 10 years, obviously post-operatively. But that's not all of it. I got to a certain point with the weight loss surgery. I lost about 40 kilos. So that's about, you know, just over 80 something pounds. And, you know, it was really quite transformative. So I was able to move more, you know, I was still able to think, well, this is really good. I can actually moderate portion control. I can, you know, if I wanted to at that time, I could have my cake, but I could just have less of it. It was really good. You know, but it still wasn't really, you know, it shifted everything that I really wanted to shift. So that really brings me to where I found low carb, and that is really a credit to my mum. So my mum had secretly been doing low carb, so she didn't tell me. She was losing weight and looking really fabulous. She found Tim Noakes's Real Meal Revolution, and that really set her on the path. And she had sort of, you know, was secretly doing this. And, you know, it really was quite a wow, you know, you're looking really good. And so she really planted the seed about, you know, reducing carbohydrates and increasing healthy fats and, you know, stopping eating those processed foods and those sorts of things. So it was really quite transformative in that way. But it was actually really hard for me because by that time I was in a new family situation. I'd repartnered. My partner had that stage two teenage boys. I had my one teenage boy. So together, the Brady Bunch, we had these three carb addicted teen boys who, you know, we had so much processed food in our pantry. It was disgusting. So it really meant the whole family had to get back to basics and eat real food. And it was actually really good, not only for the boys, but also for my partner, Andrew, because he had had some long-standing like allergies, you know, this chronic sort of catarrh that was goo. We call it the goo. And we ended up going to an immunologist for him. And he sort of was also, unbeknown to us, on the sort of, you know, real thinking about the inflammation, the benefits of inflammation and metabolic syndrome and insulin resistance. Andrew ended up having to do a CRAFT test. So that's where you do the glucose tolerance test. So we were really amazed that there were people in the medical community that could sort of detect, you know, the responses to glucose and have a look at that. But we saw, because of obviously Andrew's long-term sort of skin issues as well, plus the goo, that, you know, he may be have a touch of like the pre-diabetic. So that was really good to know that we needed to do something as an intervention. So this was around about, this was at the end of 2015. But it was actually May 2015. So that was 6 months after. May 2015, I had a serious motorcycle accident. I was critically injured and I T-boned a car and I ended up with 11 broken ribs, 2 punctured lungs, a broken shoulder blade, fractured my, you know, my sternum, but critically it was the 3 spine vertebrae that I broke, and I ended up having to have a 5-hour spinal operation. You know, I was an induced coma. Didn't know if I was going to have any sort of long-lasting effects. Multiple blood transfusions. Anyway, it sort of has meant that for me, what my mum introducing me to low carb and keto, it's about healing. It's about managing my chronic pain and inflammation. And as we say, you know, you come for the weight loss, but you stay for the health benefits. And really for me, yeah, I had lost that weight, but it's everything else that, you know, eating real food, taking out all the processed food manages my pain. It manages the inflammation from my injuries. You know, I'm no longer on pain medication. I've been able to transform my body in strength and conditioning by weightlifting. You know, I'm actually pretty much superhuman because I've got the steel rods in my back. But it's everything else that it's given me, including a total of 65 kilos, which is 143 pounds, you know, weight loss. But that's beside the point. It's the everyday stuff that low carb keto gives me. But coupled with fasting and low carb keto, I have an extra superpower. You know, this is the fact that I now know, coupling with my time restricted eating, the intermittent fasting, plus having lowered my carbs so I manage my inflammation, I'm absolutely a super duper woman. So this is, you know, I'm double barreled in this way. So it's really, really fantastic that once I joined into the community, like the low carb community, and I was going to the conferences, and that's where I heard Jason Fung and Megan Ramos, you know, that they brought me to, you know, this big superpower where knowing that I can really boost, you know, the inflammation control through fasting. You know, I haven't really looked back, and that's pretty much my story.
That's amazing, absolutely amazing. 143 pounds. How life changing is that? I mean, I know because I lost 130 myself, but 143. Wow, that's crazy. It must have changed so many things for your life. So many things that you could do now, and you look a picture of health. I've got to say that. And I'm really grateful for your mum helping you, and big shout out to your mum and all those things. And I'm glad that you're still here after that nasty accident too, and that you're on the mend and you're healed and that sort of thing. And I think you're quite right that I want to talk a bit about that in a moment, about intermittent fasting and how keto sort of can really help. And I know a lot of people in the intermittent fasting actually do both. And I guess I do, because I didn't really know any different when I started, because I was at that base of being as low carb as I could, as low sugar as I could, because, you know, I just wanted to get rid of all that stuff out of my system that had been causing me problem. To say I was strict keto, probably not, because I probably didn't understand it enough to work through it. So let's just nail it down now. And I'll start with you again, Louise, if you don't mind. Keto. Now, a lot of people will be listening to this podcast and they're going to say, what is keto? So can you just give us a sort of a quick sort of demonstration of what actually keto is?
So keto is when your body switches your primary fuel source from sugar to fat. And that means that your body is switching off some of its, you know, metabolic systems and being able to access that stored fat. And how we get there is by lowering our intake, our exogenous, so what we eat in terms of glucose. And that glucose is in the form of, you know, wheat, your sugars, your simple sugars, pasta, rice, bread, those sorts of more high starchy vegetables. And your body recognizes that it's going to have to make its own glucose rather than actually eating the glucose. It's going to have to switch on a particular metabolic process by accessing the fat and converting that into glucose. To keep, you do need glucose, don't get me wrong. You have about a teaspoon of glucose at any one time in your blood, and you still need that, you know, for brain functioning. So that's true. People aren't sort of lying. Yes, you do need carbs, but you don't need to eat them, because your body is super duper, well, your liver is a super duper engine for making that by accessing the fat and converting the fat into glucose in your blood.
Yeah, that's great. I know a lot of people that live a zero carb lifestyle. And they're not dead. They haven't starved to death. And they're very healthy people. Yeah. They get all the nutrients they want. And so absolutely. I'm a big, you know, and a big shout out to your community there in the keto world, and I highly respect it. And I don't judge anybody for what style they have or what they eat or anything, but I just always say, I like to eat what makes me feel my greatest. I do not like to eat what makes me feel terrible. So that sort of paints a picture, but we might go through a couple of questions now about keto that people have been asking me. And one of the things that it's been bugging me when I go to the supermarket, and we might throw to Jackie for this one, and then you can come in, Louise, is I see these big shelves full of keto products, right? And then I go and look at them and I turn them over and I look at the nutritional labels on the back. And I think, how on earth can those things be healthy for you when they're so full of sugar or hidden sugars, additives that just we know aren't good for us, but they're packaged up as being for the keto community. So as a member of that community, how do you feel about that, Jackie, when you look at those things?
Well, I have to admit that I don't go to supermarkets very often. My husband does the shopping and the cooking. And so I feel, well, there's a couple of things. It says keto on it, and it says 2 grams of net carbs. But then you, like you say, you turn it round and you add in all the other sugars and the fibers, and all of a sudden this small little chocolate is now 14 or 15 grams of carbs. And I think, well, that's 3/4 of what I'd eat all day. Do I want that? No. So I am not a great proponent of using these propaganda type pre-packaged foods. My motto is eat real food, which I think you'd agree with, Graham. But I see it that it's a possibility for some people to make that transition from a standard American diet or standard Western diet to a lower carb or ketogenic diet. It could be used as a tool, but I don't think we should be relying on those things. And for me, it's all about eating real food and not things that come in a packet, not things that are manufactured in a factory. So that's my opinion. But you know, everyone does them.
Yeah, that's an interesting take, and I agree with all of that what you just said. So Louise, we might ask you the same question. How do you feel about that when you walk through the supermarket, or if you go there and you see those rows and rows of products?
Well, Graham, just for the listeners, I've been for the last 2 years. So in January, I arrived home to Australia. For the last 2 years, I've been in Bangkok, Thailand, supporting Andrew on his diplomatic embassy posting. I've come back, Graham, and my mind is absolutely blown as you said, what we see in our Australian supermarkets, what we have in Woolies and Coles. You know, it's just amazing, the array of products. And as Jackie said, it's a bit of a pathway. It's a bit of a gateway, you know, from the standard sort of, you know, carb heavy diet to maybe a inverted commas for the listeners, air quotes, you know, something that may be healthier. But, you know, just eating real food that is fresh, local, and seasonal, you strip out all of those numbers. You strip out all of the chemical, you know, the chemical stuff, things that are made in the lab. It's complicated because obviously our food standards, Graham, hasn't licensed what is keto. You know, it's a marketing strategy for many of those food manufacturers. And don't get me wrong, you know, Jackie and I have interviewed some ethical food manufacturers that want to service a market which is easy, you know, a snack option for people, those supplements for people that just want to be very busy, that, you know, just want to pick up and grab and go, that they can do that. So there's a tension there. I think there's a pathway. It can be a tool or an adjunct to a just eat real food diet. But we need to be, I think, advocating, as you're doing on today, is really educating the listener to turn the packet over. And if there's too many chemical numbers, if there's any nasties in there, one of the 50 something names for sugar, you need to put it back and go and grab some bacon. an egg.
Yeah.
Piece of cheese.
It's amazing. And I think about bread, right? And I see this stuff that's approved, keto approved bread. I mean, I've tried the cloud bread and all the various breads and they're all like, most of them are pretty horrible, to be honest. And then I found this bread. I actually think it comes from New Zealand called Macro. They sell them Woolworths. It's like a roll, rolls in a packet of four or something like that. Now, it says it has four carbs in each roll, which is pretty low for a bread roll, right? So, and it's actually pretty tasty. But then I'm standing there thinking, well, is that really keto or is it not? So for me, that's really hard to understand that. And I guess a lot of people that do it, when they see that on the packaging, hey, this is keto. It's like fasting, right? If you go to Amazon and you type in intermittent fasting support foods, you'll get fasting bars, fasting gummies. I've had them come to me and want to sponsor my podcast. And they've said to me, oh, these are clean fast approved. And I said, mate, there's no such thing as clean fast approved chocolate fast bars while you're fasting. You're either fasting or you're not. And I mean, to my detriment financially, I had to say no, because it's just not in my ethos. And then I had another crowd come to me with some oils, and then another crowd come to me about gummies. And I thought, no, we promote the message of the clean fast. You're either fasting or you're not. And I guess it's a bit like keto. I mean, you guys will probably run through that with your podcast, which we'll talk about in a minute. But yeah, it's a bit of a nightmare out there, but that's for sure. But, and so what are some of the typical foods that you might sort of have every day? We'll start with Jackie. What's, well, not every day, but, you know, which is your repertoire of foods. What do you like to sort of, you know, start with in a day, that sort of thing?
Yeah. So a typical day for me will mean that I'm going to start at the end of the day before. So I will have finished eating by around 7:30. And then I won't eat until lunchtime the following day. And that will typically be for me, and I say a salad, but my salad is lettuce, cucumber, a couple of radishes, and a bit of onion, because tomatoes, you can have tomatoes. I don't like them that much, and they're very high carb. So I think for my carb allowance, I would rather have a bit of onion than a bit of tomato. So I don't have tomatoes. And then with that, I'll have a couple of hard boiled eggs. I might have some sardines. I might have the chicken breast, a piece of salmon. Not that I'm keen on salmon, but I have been known to have it. And more recently, I've been having maybe a piece of cod, something like that, that will be my lunch. Then ideally, and it doesn't always pan out, I won't eat anything until my supper. Sometimes mid-afternoon, I feel like I want something, and that might be a square of 85% chocolate. It might be a seed cracker that I've made myself with some butter. But I try and get through to the evening without eating in between the meal. And then our meals are typically some sort of meat, normally meat, could be lamb chops, pork chops, chicken. I try not to eat too much chicken. My husband will make, he make chili con carne, and he does it for the boys with the kidney beans, and he does it for me without the kidney beans. It might be a bolognese with... Usually we have two vegetables, which could be cauliflower and cabbage, broccoli. I quite like the tender stem broccoli for putting underneath bolognese or chili, something like that. So no rice, no pasta. And then afterwards, I will probably have something else. Last night, for example, it was more seed crackers because I just love them. It could be some berries and cream. It could be a square of chocolate. It could be the chocolate melted and put in some cream. So I would typically have something like that after my meal. Oh, we like the chocolate mousse made from hard-boiled eggs.
Wow, that's an interesting one. You'll have to put the recipe in the show notes. I can hear everybody saying, what, this chocolate mousse?
It's a Maria Emmerich recipe that is so simple. It sounds disgusting, but it's really tasty.
Oh, we'll have to look into it. So, Louis, same question for you. Your sort of general food tastes for you?
Yeah, with Jackie. So we just, so the time restricted eating, so from the supper the night before, same sort of timeline. I try and stop eating if I'm, you know, was working, certainly eating by 7:30, same sort of thing. And, you know, I'll break and have something to eat around lunchtime and open my eating window. And generally, I love to cook. And my most recent sort of obviously lots of cooking when we were in Bangkok, actually, because I didn't want to be eating a lot of the street food because it was cooked in really icky seed oils and stuff. And I noticed that I was generally feeling quite pain sort of coming back. But anyway, so I did a lot of cooking, and that mainly would be breaking my fast, say with a nice big, you know, cheesy omelette, like a 2-egg omelette with some bacon. I did a lot of baking, like baking a low carb bread, which was actually quite high in protein, so a good high protein bread. So if I really wanted my bread fix, then I could slice it and have some toasted Vegemite with my 2-egg omelette. And again, like Jackie, so no snacking. And the main meal when I was working from home, so Andrew was would come home, and it would be a protein. I called him the grill master. So fire up the grill, master. And the protein we would typically do would be a steak. We like salmon, Jackie. Pork and some chicken, even though I find I'm a lot more satiated with lamb and beef. They're my two go-to protein sources. About 200 grams, which is, I'm showing the listeners, my palm. So a palm-sized protein for me, only because my tummy is just obviously still sort of a little, you know, restricted. So, and I need to be mindful of keeping up my protein. And I'd have the grill master on the grill, and I'm the salad lady. And in the main, we're on high rotation was a Greek salad. So delicious, cucumbers, some tomatoes, olives, capers, and capsicum, and a drizzle of oregano and olive oil. And that would fill me up. And that was really, really keeping it simple for very busy people is just our protein, typically grilled, and a salad. So, and that's sort of really, like Jackie, if we really wanted anything extra, a handful of macadamia nuts and some crunch. I miss salt and crunch. And definitely the egg, Maria Emmerich's chocolate egg mousse was really good. We had that on high rotation. When I was living in the UK, I loved the melted chocolate folded through clotted cream. That was absolutely absolutely delicious, and so delicate. So it's such a delicate, really, really yummy.
Yeah, see, similar sort of taste to Jackie there, and that's great. I just wanted to circle back a minute. You mentioned here about your stomach issues and not being able to eat too much and that sort of thing now, and obviously that's a byproduct of your weight loss surgery there. And if you're happy to share, I just want to, you're obviously a highly intelligent woman. You've done a lot of research into this. You know so much more now about keto, intermittent fasting, how all this works, the science of it. If you had known all that at the start, would you have gone down that path? You don't have to answer that.
I said to Jackie only just the other day, like, you know, there's been a number of opportunities to really deeply reflect on that question. And, you know, it's not only just you, it's my mum sort of said, you know, if you know what you know now, would you have still gotten the surgery? But Graham, like you, I was 300 pounds. I was, 134 kilos. I couldn't move. I was not living my best life. I had thought I had exhausted all of these options. And, you know, I was at my wit's end. And I don't look like, don't get me wrong, the weight loss surgery was a tool. So it got me to a point. It is a tool which I continue to look after and respect. And, you know, I just, you know, some people are quite critical of, I took the easy way out. You cut half your stomach out. You know, no wonder you lost weight. And it's like, mate, you know, walk in my shoes as a, you know, as a morbidly obese woman, I was just surviving. So it's, I don't know, you know, would it have worked? It may well have done, of course, because I'm 110% committed to something. When I start it, you know, I finish it. And I have asked myself that question and reflected on it. And I think, you know, it may have done, it might have done. But
maybe if you found out about it now, as in 2022, with all the resources around you that you didn't have back then, you might have given it a go, you know, like Graham did.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, but we've got
to think back 10 years ago, there wasn't those resources. It wasn't easy to come by.
No, but it wasn't.
I think when you were telling us, you know, sharing with us your story, and you turned to Lou and you said, I have to do this. She's my why. I mean, I had my why because I was a single parent, but, you know, I had sort of exhausted all of those options. And I know that you went cold turkey and you did that, and you just knew that you had to do something. I knew that I had to do something, and I had obviously gone through quite an extensive list. You know, I'd been in therapy, and after the weight loss surgery, I continued to be in therapy for another 3 years. So really, you know, I had a lot of deep work to do to get me where I am and to continue. Apparently I'm one of the lucky ones, you know, because weight loss surgery has worked for me and it continues to work for me. You know, I'm coming up to my, what is it now? Over 10 years. So.
Yeah. I really agree with everything you just said, Dan, particularly around at the time. You had to make a decision at the time. And when you are 300 pounds like you were, then you can't move. You've got a young child at home. You're a single mum. And you just think, I've got to do something about this. And I don't think it's an easy way out at all. I think, in fact, it's a very hard path because, you know, it's a thing you've got to live with for a very long time. And so, you know, I hear Jason Fung talking about this a lot. Like he says, it's like the cream in your coffee. And he always says, well, hey, if somebody has to have a cream in their coffee to get them through a fast and have 450 pounds, well, so be it. I'd rather see them fasting than not. But long term, when the weight comes down, I'd like to see them go back to the pure fasting. And I sort of agree with that in that circumstance, because that person's going to die. I mean, you and I both were very heavy people. I was a walking time bomb. I could have just dropped dead at any tick of the clock. So it wasn't something I really thought about, and only because I didn't know enough about it. I mean, I knew of it. I knew people that had it. And the people that I did know that had it always had a lot of issues. You know, with stomach issues, you'd go out for dinner and they'd be there and they'd eat like the tiniest bit of steak or something. You just go, wow, okay. And then, but I just never went down that path, because once I stumbled onto intermittent fasting, then it became successful for me and I just kept with that. But in hindsight, I would say to anybody, if you're in a life-threatening situation, then maybe you've got to look at all the options for sure. But I can't tell you what a pleasure it's been to talk to you both today. We're just nearly out of time. It's been fantastic. But before we go, I'm going to get a bit of inspiration and motivation from you both. I'll start with you first, Jackie. Somebody's out there, very heavy. They're at their wit's end. They've had all these problems that all of us have had in our lives with weight. It's really desperation time. And they want to try and do something about it. Just give somebody a way that they can get started and looking into things.
Yeah, well, the first thing I'd say is that we have been brainwashed into thinking that calories in, calories out, eat less, move more is the way to go. And it's so, for many people, doesn't work and is not sustainable. So therefore, think about something else which might go against everything you believe in, because we have been so indoctrinated and brainwashed. So the very simple things you can do are well, as you know, intermittent fasting. So stop eating after your supper and do not eat until you wake up the next day is a very simple step that you can work towards. And it might be if you normally eat around 9:30 p.m. then make it 9:15 and you just keep bringing that window back. But the other things are cutting out the starchy vegetables, the pastas and the rice. We believe that we need them, but actually when you take them out of your diet, you find that you don't miss them anymore. I was a potato fiend. If my dinner did not have potatoes, then I was really craving them. So even if you gave me rice, I'd think I want potatoes. So but now I don't consider having potatoes with my dinner. I love them and I would eat them occasionally a couple of times a year, but I don't think of them as a staple part of my diet anymore. So cutting out those things will do. Start to be aware of what sugars are in things like fruit is very high sugar. We're told fruit's really good for you, but actually it's very high in sugar and doesn't really contribute much to your well-being. So there's lots of little things you can start with and taking things out. Now, Louise and I often talk about she's an abstainer and I'm a moderator. So some people can't just take small bits out and they have to do a bit like you did, Graham, and just go cold turkey and that's it. It's not in my diet anymore, but you do get used to it. And I definitely think it is worth trying. And I would suggest to anyone that they try at least for 30 days. If you can do 3 months, great. Just try these things just for a short while and see how you feel, because you're going to feel so much very different.
That's fantastic. Louise, we'll switch to you now.
So as Jackie said, she's the moderator. So she said, start small. I'm going, no, like Graham, just do it. So, and I think what you can just do is just eat real food. And as a good friend, we interviewed Gary Fetke, just eat real food that's local, fresh and seasonal, you know, that is right for you and your cultural sort of context. So these are some of the things that, you know, Jackie was saying, you know, start moving, you know, your window and making sure that your you know, that time that you stop eating to when you start eating is actually sort of lengthening, you know. And that is, I agree, Jackie, you know, it should be incremental. And it really is, you know, education, like knowledge is power. And really what I call become a label detective. Turn the label over, and if you see too many things and too many numbers, and particularly one of the key thing for us low carb keto folks is how many grams of carbohydrates, how many grams of sugar in there. And I'm not a big one for tracking in a way. I mean, tracking helped me initially, you know, the tracking apps and those sorts of things. You know, that's part of the education and the monitoring and that sort of stuff to eyeball, as you can sort of see. So become a label detective. Really get your head around what is going in your food. But that shouldn't be an issue when you eat just real food. So, you know, getting back to first principles. And that's number three. Every time I would buy a new kitchen gadget, it was actually a medical equipment. That was my justification. I'm investing in my health. I'm investing in, you know, this U-Butte sort of sous vide, you know, the Instant Pot. My Thermomix is a medical grade equipment investment in my health. And sometimes that might mean we have to get back to first principles, and that's, you know, time. You know, we need to sort of manage our time to, you know, to be able to cook and prep and prepare. And we're all busy people. I get that. So batch cooking, you know, making stuff on the weekends. But that doesn't really matter. Tip number four, when you're fasting, how much more time do you have when you're not eating and not cooking? My kitchen is sparkling, you know, when I don't actually make a mess in the kitchen because I'm not eating. So it's a superpower, and it's a super clean kitchen right now. So.
Yeah, that's certainly one of the bonuses, though. I can't believe it's just so much of this has resonated with me, what you've talked about in this show. But we want to move now, just before we go, you ladies have started a podcast, well, you've been going a while now, you're 76 episodes. I was lucky enough to be on that podcast myself, the Fabulously Keto podcast. You've had some very inspiring people on there. I've listened to quite a few of the episodes. It's a great podcast. So just quickly, Jackie, I might just get you to tell people where they can find you through the podcast, Instagram, and also your Facebook group, your community as well, before we go, please.
Sure. So the, like you said, the podcast is called Fabulously Keto. The website is fabulouslyketo.com. Instagram is fabulouslyketo1. Facebook, Fabulously Keto. So everywhere is Fabulously Keto except Instagram, which is Fabulously Keto 1. And the Facebook group is also Fabulously Keto. Graham, sorry, I missed the beginning bit of what you said because of the connection lost.
I was just asking you about the, you know, the group, the podcast, how people can find you and that sort of thing, which you've just been talking about. But I'm a member of that Fabulously Keto group, and there's a lot of very inspiring people in there. And I guess it's a bit like fasting groups. If you want to learn a bit about fasting and get along to, you know, Louise and Jackie's group and have a look at that and listen to some of their podcasts, if you want to listen to, you know, a lot about the ketogenic lifestyle, because your podcast just isn't about keto, obviously. I mean, I was on there and I'm not a strictly keto person. So yeah, just tell people about that, Jackie, before we go, maybe.
Yeah, so we interview anybody that is on a health journey, really using either intermittent fasting or a fasting protocol or low carb or keto or carnivore, so anything in that health space. And they, you know, we've spoken to some medical people that will that don't actually do it themselves, or they don't need to do it themselves, and they probably eat a what we would say is more a real food way of eating. So we interview all sorts of people, from people like ourselves who are just lay people to medical professionals to all sorts of walks of lives. We've had on, well, actually it's not coming up, we've got a cardiac thoracic surgeon, so all sorts of people that we talk to, and how they use it in their, either in their work or their life, and how they've changed their lives.
Yeah. Well, thank you both for the work that you're doing in your community and helping people change their lives and their health. It's much appreciated by everybody out there. But Jackie and Louise, thank you for joining me here on the Fasting Highway.
Thanks, Graham.
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. We'll talk soon.
Oh, thank you so much, Jackie and Louise. I think that was a fantastic insight into the ketogenic lifestyle. And your journeys have both been truly remarkable also. And thank you for everything you do with your podcast and sharing information. And you truly are changing people's lives. And it was a pleasure to talk to you. So thanks very much for joining us. Okay, folks. Also, just a shout out to those people in the Fasting Highway Facebook group. Thank you for your support and everything that you've been doing there in the past week. It's been fantastic. We've had another great week there. If you feel like coming and joining us, please do. We're closing in just on the 6,000 member mark there in a short period of time. And we'd love to have you, and you can help get started on your journey and get some motivation to continue. Anyway, folks, don't forget, until next week, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.